turn my tide. Keep lurching on the sidelines, searching for the guidelines, twitching on the byways, itching on the highways of life.
Welcome to session 4 of the Neurotic Vaccine. I'm clinical and forensic psychologist Dr. Scott Kapoyan. As the world welcomes those other vaccines that'll one day make us feel safe enough to finally shed our masks, this podcast will unmask my patient, former Seinfeld writer and author Andy Cowan, in a virtual therapy session that'll try to help him and you to become immune to, or at least less influenced by, neurosis.
You're unmasking me now? I feel like a lab experiment.
Yes, I'm revealing you in all your glory and in all your process. We're beginning therapy, Andy.
Was that boringly generic expository remark for me or the listeners?
It's for anyone who therapeutically benefits from your unmasking, be it you and or the listeners.
So it's for nobody. I used to hate masks as a kid. Every year, I'd wear my rubber mask 2 minutes on Halloween before yanking it off. I'd wind up half Casper the Ghost, half sweaty kid who looks like he just saw a ghost.
I'm talking, Andy, about a metaphorical mask. The mask you use to conceal your anxiety, your doubt, your worry, and your guilt. The mask that we are going to take off and reveal you.
Yeah, I think you just revealed a neuron misfiring. I do have something to share with you. But I hate to bring it up because I hate to jinx things. I have this fear when things seem good, I always think the other shoe's about to drop. You know, waiting for a correction, like the stock market. But I got to tell you, Dr. K, I'm actually feeling pretty good.
I want to hear more about that, Andy.
Pretty good. Now I'm thinking of Larry David. Compared to his bank balance, I have no right to feel pretty good. I'm so out of sync. How can I be feeling better during a plague? I mean, what am I, the devil? Don't devils feel better while others suffer?
Well, Andy, that's one of the many contradictions we're going to help you resolve in therapy. But I want to know about your feeling good. Tell me more about that.
Well, I do wish suffering on somebody, like the inventor of on-hold music. Imagine joining the school band as a kid, studying music in college, slaving, scrimping, hustling for years to finally get your music heard by the public, and it turns into on-hold music that pisses them off. Anyway, yeah. This is why I feel better. A dating app may have actually paid off.
Wow. Gee, I remember a prior show when you were dissing dating apps, and now you seem to be in favor of them.
It's incredible. Years and years of horrendous coffee dates off dating sites. No masks, no safe distancing, no chemistry. This was one of the worst. The time I didn't have liquid on a date, and it pissed the woman off. I never told you about that, did I?
I don't think I remember that event.
In the middle of the day, I meet her at a coffee place. I was so accommodating, the perfect gentleman. What kind of sweetener would you want? I'm shaking all the different colored sweeteners, the pink, the blue, you know, anything to make her happy as she's sipping her beverage, going out of my way to just cater to her every need and whim. And I sit down and she says, "What? You're not getting something to drink?" I said, oh, no, I'm fine. And she winds up getting so pissed that I'm not joining her in a beverage that I finally admitted, okay, you want to know the truth? It's my prostate. It's the middle of the day. I have chores to do after this. I don't feel like going to a public restroom. That's it. So she still couldn't let it go. And you know what I did? I finally did like the dealers in Vegas. Put my hands up and I went, that's it.
Andy.
And I walked off.
I'm laughing because I'm not laughing at you. The situation is an incredible version of humanity, but that's such a profound self-revelation. Isn't that something that should be said in therapy? I mean, could you not have said, oh, it's a medical issue or something like that?
Are you saying that it's a good thing I admitted that or a bad thing?
I'm saying there's elements of good and bad in it.
Oh, good, good. You should be a politician. You're on all sides of the map there.
Andy, my job is to understand the broad spectrum of humanity, and you clearly exhibit that.
A medical issue. Like that would have appeased her. I'm sick of lousy dates. Here's my note from the doctor. A mutual connection with someone is so elusive. I mean, how can this be? I'm not used to this role. My dating life isn't a series. It's an occasional one-time special that ain't. We had a coffee date and a movie date, an actual date, in early 2020, before all hell broke loose, right?
Pre-pandemic.
Yeah. And then ever since, we've had time to email, Zoom, you know, commiserate. I mean, when you have time to share an actual disaster together, not a measly dating disaster, they're a dime a dozen, you know, kind of brings you closer. You know, I'm like Leonardo DiCaprio and she's Kate Winslet. Wonder when our iceberg will hit. See, there's that fear of the other shoe dropping I was talking about.
Well, yeah, because it's so exciting being in this position, because I know you spent a lot of time on dating apps and you got rid of them and you backed off and you gave it one last chance. And it looks like you've got something that's rising to excitement.
Well, we Zoomed again the other day for a couple hours. I mean, it's easier to choreograph things on Zoom. I'll give it that much. I mean, you're on camera. You know, it's a performance.
Wait a minute. So you didn't feel like you were just acting naturally and organically? You felt you were performing for 2 hours?
Well, it wasn't a Jerry Lewis telethon. The natural order of things on Zoom does lend itself to performance in a way. I mean, on our first Zoom date, I used the phony digital background. I was on some island in Tahiti. I don't know where it was. My hair was even blowing a little from the chroma key effect. Talk about a misrepresentation of who I really am, a homebody shut in normal times, let alone mandated lockdowns.
I'm so excited that you are making a connection and spending 2 hours on Zoom. I'm a little concerned about all the machinations you go through to get there. I'm wondering if that expends a lot of mental energy on your part, the performance aspect, the background, the setting.
Well, I'll tell you this much. I am perfect in the beginning. I fall in love with me. I'm so perfect. I'm laughing at the right moments, listening at the right moments. Those first dates, I'm basically running for office. I pretend to be somebody else to hopefully get their vote.
So how is your body politic responding to your perfection?
Well, you know, if she agrees to make it a regular thing, which I'm hoping, that means she nominates me. Then I have to start moving to the center and compromising. But winning their heart is like winning the election. Then I can hopefully start throwing out my campaign promises and doing whatever the hell I want.
So, Andy, this sounds like the beginning stages of a relationship, correct?
It could be, but here's the thing, Dr. K. In the beginning, I'm so busy trying to be perfect that it can get harder and harder to top yourself. After a perfect Zoom, the next Zoom's got to be even more perfect. I don't want the dating curve flattening. I got to avoid the Orson Welles syndrome. I could peak too early, you know? Go from Citizen Kane to a bit part with Miss Piggy in the Muppet movie. You remember Orson did that late in his career?
Yes. Well, he had a hard time getting financing for his projects.
Unlike Miss Piggy.
Based on our work together, what you probably know are my thoughts about perfection. What do you think I'm about to say to you right now?
This is a perfect waste of time. You don't have to be perfect.
Yes. What do you think of that?
Not much.
Andy, sometimes a simple analysis contains profound truths. I don't think you need to pursue this quest for perfection. I think you're going to be more successful if you back off just a little bit. The mostly perfect guy, not the completely perfect guy. What do you think about that for a homework assignment on your next Zoom session?
Okay. So I'm going to be taking notes when I stray into perfection that I should be more of a jerk at that point and lay back on the perfection.
No, I don't want you to go from perfection to jerky, just from obsessive perfection to slightly less perfection.
But I feel like I have to be such a perfect listener. That stress and having to learn all about a new person, it's like studying all over again. I have to memorize all these new facts. You live in fear of getting the dreaded, remember when I told you? And you don't. So your only hope is that your nod looks legit. Because you can't say, I don't remember. Because I was too busy hearing myself think, I can't believe she's connecting with me. While I was listening to myself think and not connecting with her.
You must have connected enough, Andy, because it seems to me, if you're having two-hour Zoom conversations with her, this person's really into you. Nobody Zooms for 2 hours unless there's a strong connection.
Well, I could have been exaggerating. It seems like 2 hours.
What? Andy? Remember the ground rules of therapy, radical honesty?
You know what? A new relationship is like taking your act on the road to a whole other audience.
An audience of one?
Yeah. All your best anecdotes from your life are fresh material again. Till you hear the dreaded, you mentioned that before.
Has that happened?
Yeah, my life story is already in reruns with her. I need to get another life. I'm still wearing different clothes on our Zooms. You know, I haven't gotten to the shirt reruns yet. And I've talked about this before. You know, all those relationships women talk about that didn't work out before with other guys. Dr. K, what are the odds I don't have the same flaws that could be future deal breakers she doesn't know about yet?
If she's making a true connection with you, she will overlook those flaws because what you bring to the table is so much more than your normal human flaws.
What are they? Superhuman flaws? That does wonders for my confidence. Maybe you're my kryptonite.
I'm talking about your humanity, Andy. Your willingness to interact with her, your capacity to give her a chance. After all the frustration of dating apps for 20 years, you're still in the game. You're still trying to make a play. That's exciting.
Well, I must like her because I'm starting to pull back the curtain a little bit and give her a preview of a flaw or two, you know, to see if any are deal breakers. I figure it'll bring us closer if she knows the real me.
Wow, it sounds like you're even getting beyond the honeymoon stage and getting into more of the real relationship.
Oh, great. The honeymoon's over already? I didn't even get to skip with her in slow motion through a field of daisies.
I'm talking about a deeper connection, Andy, where we celebrate our relationships that include imperfections. We all have flaws. Embrace your flaws. There's no need to be obsessively perfectionistic about your flaws. Our flaws are part of who we are, just like our assets are. Acknowledge them, appreciate them.
All right, I'll acknowledge them. When the elevator arrives at the garage and another car is pulling in, I rush in and hit the button before they have time to park and head to the elevator.
Wait a minute. What's going on there?
I do send it down, though. A lot of people don't send it down. I immediately put the key in and send it back down to the garage so they don't have to hit the button themselves to have it returned. But I prefer a solo ride.
Yeah, I was thinking you just don't want to share your elevator space with another human.
Because they're usually busy texting in their own little bubble, more like a robot. Here's another flaw of mine. I agree to terms I'm too lazy to read. You know, that big pop-up window you're supposed to check comes up. I could be agreeing to join the Taliban for all I know.
I have a thought about what you're talking about. In therapy, Andy, we talk a lot about reframing, renaming perceived negative aspects of ourselves into something more realistic. I wouldn't even call those flaws. I would call them, at the worst, quirks.
I like quirks better than flaws.
Yeah, we all have them. I'm sure your friend has them.
Well, I'm trying to avoid any recognition of flaws at this point because I'd be too crushed to discover them. I still need to fantasize about the impossibly perfect woman.
Listeners, this is where the patient is starting to come to grips with his own realization that perfection is impossible.
I feel like a fly on the wall in my own therapy session. Now, God forbid, a flaw does pop up in her. I tell myself, all right, maybe that's an isolated incident. You know, a fluke, like Kevin Hart's publicist taking a day off. At the same time, I'm looking for the chinks in the armor, you know, like a solar eclipse. I try not to look, but I can't help but sneak a peek.
The more you learn about each other, Andy, the more meaningful it'll be for the both of you.
No, but she is learning more about me. On the subsequent Zoom dates, I killed the phony Tahiti Island background, and I revealed whatever you want to call it, a quirk. I revealed my true cluttered office. It was the least cluttered part of the cluttered office. You know, let her get used to that, and then by the time she sees the rest of the clutter, maybe it won't be as shocking.
Don't be afraid of letting her get to know you.
When they think they know me, hopefully they like me.
But when they really know you?
What about when they really know me? I mean, you never see that wormhole in the supermarket apple till you take it home. Must be a life metaphor there somewhere, right?
Letting her get to really know you, and you her, presents more opportunities than barriers.
You know something? I complain about feeling invisible a lot, especially in LA. Maybe I want to be invisible. You know, a relationship is a mirror on me. Maybe I don't want to show him the real me because I don't want to see my own reflection.
I think you're showing another insight into your own mental processes. Like there's an upside to invisibility.
Maybe. If you run a red light at an intersection with a camera there. How do you go from loving their fake perfection you're clinging to loving the imperfections, Dr. K?
With patience, time, and rehearsal. What you're talking about, Andy, are normal processes that happen in any human relationship, especially a love relationship. I would say, based on what you've told me, you're in stage one of intimacy, the anticipation, excitement, infatuation stage. But you're getting close to stage two, the real stage, where people discuss fears, disappointments, flaws, quirks, and other things that are hard to hear sometimes.
What if they start believing they're as perfect as I treat them to be early on? Expect utter reverence, even if their behavior doesn't warrant it. They could turn into Kim Jong-un.
This is something that we call in our business negative future prediction, fantasizing about things that are completely unlikely. Might be good to check that, Andy.
Why? Everything I've predicted to be negative in my life turned out to be true.
Well, I think you had the wrong mindset at that time, Andy, and now you're moving towards a different mindset. What were your thoughts about our session today?
That I had none. Well, am I supposed to feel noticeably less neurotic now?
Wow. I don't know how you're supposed to feel. I wonder how you really do feel. I feel great. Yeah, we really covered a lot of territory there.
You should charge me for therapy. You feel great.
We're working together as a team, Andy. When you're doing good, I'm doing good.
And when I'm not?
I'm still doing good.
I feel good about this. We have two fantastic guests on today's podcast. A comedian who proudly wears his neurosis on his sleeve, but he also works a lot. And before you get to work, don't you generally roll up your sleeves?
That's quite an insight. Congratulations, Andy.
Well, even if he rolls up his neurosis, this is true. Jay Leno was nice enough to call us to personally suggest this man was neurotic enough for our show.
How thoughtful.
Comedian Elan Gold will be joining us.
What a pro.
He was on the 11th season of Curb, and his one-man show got raves, half Jewish, half very Jewish. Now, people can be waspish who aren't necessarily full-on wasps. Yet I, a full-on Jew, am still Jewish. Unlike non-Jew, Joy Behar, who isn't Jewish, but seems Jewish-ish. Am I neurotic-ish or full-on neurotic, Dr. K?
You're a work in progress-ish.
Well, this man is all about work and progress. We have a special guest who truly needs no introduction. Nobody's need no introduction either. Who wants me to introduce a very unspecial guest? Anyway, the most trusted medical leader in the country, Dr. Anthony Fauci, will be calling soon.
Wow, that is so exciting.
He was muzzled by the old White House, so we couldn't hear from him then. Trump ignored masks, but he was great with muzzles. Do muzzles restrict droplets? Anyway, we're thrilled to give the initial chief medical advisor to President Biden another outlet as he starts this new chapter in his life. Who's been busier than Anthony Fauci, Dr. K?
I can't think of anybody.
He doesn't even have time to clear his throat. He always sounds like he has a frog down there. Our governor in California, Gavin Newsom, another frog down there. He's also very busy. You know, I feel guilty about the frog cracks.
Really? Guilt is a wasted emotion.
Now I feel guilty feeling guilty. If I can't guilt trip with you, my shrink, who can I guilt trip with?
Now I feel guilty. Okay. What else do you feel guilty about?
I have all these people programmed into my phone directory I don't talk to anymore. Yes, I still have a landline. There's only so much space in a landline, so I've reached the max. If I wanted to program somebody new, I'd have to remove an old name. Which means the new people I do talk to aren't permanent enough fixtures in my life to replace the old people I don't even talk to.
You feel guilty about that?
A little. Landing a spot on my landline is like getting tenure. It's a lifetime appointment, or like a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Even after you can barely remember who they are, they're not going anywhere.
We've talked about your feelings about still having a landline in past sessions, positive and negative, but in a way, it's kind of anachronistically cute.
You know, that would mean a lot more coming from a woman. You're anachronistically cute, Andy. Coming from my shrink, I don't know. But speaking of guilt, I've channeled a lot of it in cartoons over the years. And as I've mentioned in past shows, I've really enjoyed writing cartoon panels for terrific artists like Dan Peraro and his award-winning King Features comic, Bizarro. It's time once again to partner with you virtual artist listeners in today's Cartoon by You. I've written it, and you listeners will now proceed to draw it in your heads. Then, Dr. K, as always, I'd like your psychological assessment of the cartoon.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, when you set up an online banking profile, you get a choice of security questions. I hate it when I can't answer my own security question. Year you attended the senior prom. I didn't go to the damn senior prom. Are you happy? Wendy Coltman rejects me, and decades later, I can't get into my own checking account? She rejected me in junior high. Didn't ask her to the prom. Knew that was a lost cause. Anyway, another security question online banking asks, what was the name of your first pet? Virtual artists, begin drawing in your head. A young kid calling out to an embarrassed-looking dog, here, checking account security clue. Caption, to make sure when he grows up, he'll remember his clue to online banking, Billy ruins his dog's life.
I'm wondering if Billy might fear he'll have some sort of cognitive issue when he grows up that prevents him from remembering his first dog.
Yeah, but what does that say about me? Who cares about this imaginary dog I'm talking about? Aren't you supposed to psychologically analyze the writer of this cartoon?
Well, if you're writing about a, yes, imaginary dog that gets easily embarrassed or traumatized, generally, pets pick up the essence of their owners. So their owners could also be easily traumatized. So I'm wondering if you, Andy, the creator slash owner of the dog and Billy, might be easily embarrassed by names, nicknames, handles.
Actually, I used to have a nickname in junior high that embarrassed me. Head.
What did that mean to you?
I had a proportionally big head as a kid. How's that for creativity on the kid's part? Let's call him Head. Never grew a big head over Wendy Coltman rejecting me. Wait a minute. Has that been your goal as my shrink? To shrink my head?
I want to shrink what's not working and expand what is working. Shrink your misery and expand your happiness.
I might as well chuck you and get a dog.
Yeah.
I should get a dog, but I wish they could breed one without a digestive system.
Well, that would be an artificial dog, not a real dog, Andy.
I looked into one of those things. There's this realistic dog robot. I always complain about robots, but this one I could fall for, developed by Jim Henson's people for the elderly in nursing homes for company. But I was looking at this thing and thinking, oh, is that cute? But you know, if I brought it to a park bench, I'd look like a pervert.
In this case, I'd applaud your tendency to not venture out of your apartment.
Well, thank you for your analysis of the cartoon, Dr. K. And thank you, listeners, for the artwork in your heads. As always, if you imagined your signature before mine, please reimagine that. I'm just kidding. I couldn't care less about that. But before we get to Dr. Fauci, you know what I do care about?
Personal growth? Human connection? The meaning of life?
Lazy language habits. Like when people say, like. I'll save that rant for another show. Like when people say, I could care less. Because what they really mean is, I couldn't care less. But in this case, Dr. K, I really do mean, I could care less. The amount I care to hear about another royal birth. the countdown to plopping out a future inexplicably hallowed human by a present-day inexplicably hallowed human. I could care less. The amount I care to watch Anderson Cooper ever again hack on another sip of tequila on New Year's Eve. I could care less. About watching Andy Cohen's endless repartee leave Anderson mirthfully speechless on New Year's Eve. And about watching their CNN buddies, Don Lemon and Allison Camerata, toss their news authority hats to don their self-absorbed New Year's Eve party thrower hats. Which is less than the amount I care. Whether or not the slice of pizza, the infamous New York subway rat, dragged down the stairs, gave him heartburn.
Wow. That was quite a therapeutic rant you went on. Feel better?
Yeah, I do. Thanks for asking.
That's because I care. I could care less.
Very good. No, I mean, I like CNN. I like Allison Camerata. I like Anderson Cooper. I like Don Lemon. But come on. If you're the most trusted name in news, I don't remember Walter Cronkite on New Year's Eve.
Good evening. I'm here with my buddy, Eric Severide, and I'm about to down a shitload of tequila. That's the way it is.
Ah, perfect timing. Yeah, we're ready when he is. It's Fauci.
Wow, this is such an honor.
I'm nervous. Shit, did I lose him? Whoops, sorry you heard that. Hi.
Hi.
Andy Cowan and Dr. Kapoyan on the neurotic vaccine. Thank you so much for doing this. I know it was frustrating not being heard when Trump was... That won't change after this. Well, no, our audience may be small, but... Oh, we know how busy you are. He didn't get the hint. He's not clearing his throat. Sir, hold on. I'm going to put your voice on the air. Pardon? No. No.
Oh, come on.
Please. Okay, we won't. Well, now you really won't be heard. This way, Biden won't know it's you calling?
Huh?
But he's not muzzling you.
Yeah.
Trump was the one who... Oh. The president really thinks our show's a bunch of malarkey?
So glad we're on his radar.
Well, at least he's heard about us. Oh, you think we're a bunch of malarkey. Yeah. Well, I guess you wouldn't want Biden to think less of you for... Well, no. Calling us doesn't help your reputation, but no, we are kind of beneath you. You're right, but...
We may be a small show, but we have a potentially massive impact curing neurosis.
You're not even curing it for this audience of one. No, that was for my co-host, Dr. Fauci. Yeah, sir, you can safely distance from us. That's fine. Do you have your mask on? What's neurotic? No, I know droplets don't travel through the phone. I was kidding. I wish you'd work on a neurotic vaccine. I wouldn't need to bother with Dr. K here.
Andy, Dr. Fauci is an immunologist, not a psychologist. Besides, he's too busy.
Oh, boy, you sound defensive. Yeah, my co-host. Yeah, that's right. Like Dr. Biden. Yeah, not a real doctor, right.
My PhD is just as real as Dr. Biden's.
Come on, Scott, don't piss him off.
Absolutely, my handwriting is legible.
Oh, really? So is Dr. Biden's? And yours isn't. Yeah, you are the real doctor. Well, that's why I'd love to ask you, of all people, can you give us a clearer read on when we might reach herd immunity? Yeah, a lot of us are confused still. Tell you something you don't know. Sounds like you have a frog in your throat? He didn't know that. Told him something he didn't know. I'm sorry, sir. I didn't mean to imply you weren't up to speed on the vaccines. Sir, let me cut to the chase. And the most important question on listeners' minds, when can I get a sixth shot? Well, I'd rather not give you my age. You know, I'm in LA. People don't return your calls if you're not young. Yeah, you're right. Texts. Nobody calls anymore. Uh-oh, I think my calls reference just gave away my age. Look, I admit it. I'm in a vulnerable age group. No, I'm not in a nursing home. No. I'm home and nursing a beer right now. Does that count? I am in a vulnerable age group. I'm vulnerable to telemarketers who sucker me into picking up the phone. Yeah, it's a landline. I actually pick it up. Ah, damn it, another age giveaway. 81-year-old guy's making me look like a codger. But I'm not in a nursing home, Dr. Fauci. Why would you even mention that? Uh-huh. Really? A dog robot's love would boost my immune system? Oh, comedian Elon Gold's here.
What about Dr. Fauci?
Sorry, Doc. Elon agreed to be heard. You are the perfect guest for the neurotic vaccine.
You don't even know that yet, Andy. This could all fall apart. At the end of this, you could say, you know, Elon was the worst guest we've ever had. Now you're setting me up to fail.
You figured out my game plan.
Just my answer alone makes me the perfect guest that I'm already worried about failing. I need this neurotic vaccine. Sorry, go ahead.
And good news for your career, there is no vaccine for that yet.
Thank God, because neurosis is a part of Judaism the way complaining is. You know that we were the first people to complain. We invented complaining. It was around the time that fire was discovered, and everyone was so excited about it. And then the Jews came along, and they were like, it's a little too hot for me. Give me something lukewarm, maybe room temperature. That was the first complaint ever, and then it hasn't stopped. And I like to call myself a professional complainer, because if you think about it, comedians, we just get paid to complain.
Dr. K, do you take my complaining about your therapy less personally now?
I've accepted that as part of the therapy, so I know that going in.
Well, here's my theory about therapists, because I'm so glad that you have Dr. K on, because the reason that there's, people always ask me, why are there so many Jewish comedians? We get paid to complain. The ultimate dream Jew job is to complain and then get a check at the end of your complaining. The only thing that Jews enjoy more than complaining is arguing. That's why there's so many Jewish lawyers.
Ah.
Because all these young law students, they get into law school and they're like, wait, let me get this right. You're telling me that all we have to do once we get a job is show up and argue. Yeah. And wait. And whether or not we win or lose the argument, we still get paid? Oh, yeah. And get this. You're going to love this part. You also get to file a complaint. There could be nothing better than complaining, arguing, getting paid. This is really the best. And that's when it hit me. If that's the best job for a Jew, what is the worst job? A therapist. One after the other, people show up to your office and complain to you about their crappy lives. And it's not like as a therapist in the middle of it, you could be like, oh, wait, you think you have problems? Listen to this.
Dr. K, if I'm convinced your problems are worse than mine, I might feel comparatively better.
Well, I'll be sure to schedule your next therapy after I've had a bad day, Andy.
I'm going to assume that Scott's also one of us.
I'm not a member of the tribe, but I'm an admirer.
I'll never look at Freud the same way. He must have hated his job.
Oh, my God. He was not a happy camper. You know what he thought about his mother. You know what I mean?
The world's most famous atheist.
Bill Maher?
Yeah.
A lot of people think religion is man-made, and I believe in the divinity. I think that it was God-made, because what man would come up with religion? Rule number one, cut off the tip of your penis. Okay. Rule number two, no bacon. What man would do that to other men? And by the way, when you're starting a religion, if it is a man-made religion, the whole point of a religion is to have followers. It's kind of like Instagram.
Mm.
So if you want followers, you don't want to discourage. You don't want to say, hey, join me, but just take this knife to your...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It must have been God.
Okay, here's my complaint. How come God didn't tell Dr. K not to eat bacon?
He told me not to eat ice cream during Lent.
That's why Dr. K, who is not Jewish, is a great therapist, because he doesn't care that the patients are doing the complaining.
Ah.
He doesn't have that innate need to complain back. And that's why Dr. K is your good therapist. Am I right?
I think he nailed it, Dr. K. You were demoted from great to good, and you're not complaining about it.
Well, you managed to see the bad and the word good. That's quite an accomplishment, Andy.
Wait, was that a complaint?
I used to complain when I was younger, but I eased my way out of it through years of therapy, self-work, education, because I realized it wasn't working. It didn't contribute to a healthy lifestyle. And I could never turn it into something funny like you and successful comedians do, because you start with complaining, but you turn it into something else. I think you probably agree with this, Andy, you probably would too, is that what you guys do is you make the personal universal.
I like that. I have a bit that I talk about when my wife says things like, I'm not in the mood. And I say, that's fine. You know, I don't force anybody to do anything. But I do try to make a little case for myself. So I'll say, okay, honey, you're not in the mood. I understand that. But just so you know, happiness has the word penis in it.
So it's okay I didn't mention? So does unhappiness?
Why do you keep reliving this part of Elon's interview?
Just making sure I didn't leave anything out.
What's done is done. Can we go back to it now?
All right.
And she looked at me and said, that's fair, but just so you know, vagina has nah in it. She won that one.
And when you talk about your wife, we might not have that exact same complaint about our partners, but we have complaints on that level, and we know what it's like. It's like when I saw Seinfeld a couple of years ago, he came and he talked about, he walks into his house and his wife said, why are you yelling at me when he said hello? Who can't relate to that?
They always win. Don't even try.
Whether you're famous and rich or a nobody, familiarity breeds contempt.
I literally can find a way to complain about good things. Like, for example, traveling. People love to travel. And all I see when I'm traveling is, first of all, wherever you go, the second you get there, people will tell you where you should be.
Yes.
You're here and you're like, oh, no, yeah, it's good here. Better there. Trust me, you got to go there. But I like it here. Yes, but you'll love it there. I landed in Sydney, Australia, after traversing the globe, 14 hours. Most people live their life and don't get to go to Australia. I land in Sydney. I'm like, okay, I'm there. And the second I land, they're like, you got to go to Bondi. Have you been to Bondi? You got to see Bondi. Can I enjoy Sydney for a day? Bondi, it's the best beach. Then I get to Bondi. I listen to them. I get to Bondi and they're like, have you seen the reef? You got to get over there. And then this is the worst part of traveling. When they guilt you, the reef, you know, it's bleaching. What? It's dying. It's eroding. To force me to go, give me that pressure. You got to go there now. It's a 2-hour flight from here. Is it that imminent? I remember landing in Israel and I get into the cab. Let's go to the Mamila Hotel in Jerusalem, please. No. I must take you to the Dead Sea first. Like, now? Yes, right now. It's evaporating. You didn't hear this? No, I heard that. I heard it's evaporating, but come on. You want to see a picture of it 100 years ago? Okay, so we do have some time. You know what else is eroding and dying? Me. I'll be dead long before the Dead Sea dies, but I don't use that as my marketing tool. Come see Elon go before he erodes and dies.
I would die sitting on a plane for 14 hours. Give me Google Earth. I'll get the gist.
Well, that's the new thing. Now it's all on Zoom. So I've been doing all these Zoom comedy shows during the pandemic. Speaking of Australia, I had to wake up at 3 a.m. The show was at 4 a.m.
Ah.
And I was exhausted for 2 days after. I had no idea that you could get jet lagged Zooming to Australia. Zoom comedy shows are very much like married sex. this is the situation we find ourselves in. May as well have at it. There are no other viable options. In both of those cases, right in the middle, I find myself asking, are you enjoying this at all? Is this, are you, because I can never tell if I'm doing well or not. I could barely hear anything on your end. Are you muted? Unmute yourself. And it's a very similar approach too, by the way, doing a Zoom show and the wife. I'm going to do my best to perform. I don't think we should be recording this. We don't want this out there. Probably best for you to have a couple of drinks before we get started. You know, it's very similar, the Zoom comedy show, to being with the wife.
At least on Zoom, you can last 40 minutes.
That's true. On Zoom, you could last 40 minutes. I like that.
You're a born and bred Bronx guy, are you not?
Born and bred and raised in the Bronx. I'm a Bronx boy. I don't want to say that I'm in this company, but Robert Klein is a Bronx boy.
Always loved Robert Klein.
There's very few comedians that aren't. Our mutual friend Jay Leno, not from New York. And that's why he didn't do very well. I love Jay. The weirdest thing now is being friends with Jay when all of a sudden the phone rings like, hey, it's Jay. Oh, this is good. You hear about this? I mean, about this? And he's just doing jokes to you. He's testing out material.
You got him down.
He's all about the jokes. He'll just call you and just go, you like this one? Let me try this one out. Oh, yeah, about this? Donald Trump in the news again.
Okay. Give us your impression of Larry David.
So the amazing thing about Curb is I did an episode last season, and Larry, who, you know, everyone has their own perception of Larry and, you know, oh, he's a misanthrope and he's a this. Let me tell you what Larry is. A mensch, because my scene got cut for time and he didn't have to do this, but he called me to tell me that. He gets on the phone. He's like, I'm sorry.
That's him.
And I'm like, oh, no, what happened? He's like, oh, cut. And I was like, what? Why? And he explained that any scene, he goes, you were so funny in it. I was so funny in it. I love this scene. But any scene that doesn't move the story forward gets cut.
Oh, when I was at Seinfeld, he was always all about the story.
So you know that Larry is a stickler for story. He doesn't want an episode to run too long. But back to the menschiness, he said, I'm going to bring you back next year. Mm. And, you know, everyone's like, I mean, come on. Is he really going to keep to his word? And, you know, he's not thinking of you. Cut to a year later, my manager emails me. You know, you were cut from one episode of Curb last year. Well, this season, you're doing two.
Wow.
What is improvising on a Curb episode like?
Oh, my God. This is during the pandemic. So we masked and tested three times, and I had to quarantine and all that. But I had the greatest time doing a bunch of scenes. It's with Larry and Jeff Garland. And I was just telling Jeff Garland this the other day. I don't think they are aware that when you're in a scene with Jeff and Larry, it's this iconic portrait that you're staring at. It's Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costa. I don't just mean the big guy in the thing. I just mean the comedy duo.
Yeah.
That is so iconic. And you almost can't believe that you're staring at them. This is what you've looked at on TV for 10 years. And then you got to get that out of your head and just be in the moment and improvise. And my goodness, you know what it is? It's volleying with McEnroe.
They up your game.
You couldn't be more right, Andy. I am not a great improviser, but when you are with them, they will up your game. You want to rise to their level, and you may not hit their level, but you're way better than your normal. You just find yourself going back and forth. And he says something, and then you say something, and you're just bouncing, and then observations and bits come out of it.
You must be high after that.
I'll give you a perfect example. In one of the scenes, I'm definitely a Jewish guy. And I say to Larry, I go, ach, is it good? And I say, oh, by the way, you know, as you know, our people, we use ach in a positive way.
Yeah.
We went out for dinner. Ach, it was delicious. Larry, without missing a beat, goes, unlike ich. Ich is bad. I'm like, yes, exactly. Ich is bad. Ach is good. And now we're like in a bit. And that's how it worked. It's unbelievable.
You got to do your impression of another filthy rich guy. The king of all media. Howard?
Well, this is very exciting. Let me tell you something. This Andy Cohen, he is the straight Andy Cohen, Robin.
I'm also the straight Andy Cowan, whose name has been mispronounced my entire life.
I know. It is Andy Cowan. But I love it, Robin.
Ah, oh, that's good. See, there's your ach.
I love doing Howard to Howard. That's like when he invited me on the show, I did a sketch. I was Howard, or getting to do Jay for Jay.
Yeah.
You know, getting to do any impression for the guy. I did dueling Jeff Goldblum on a late night show where, yes, where it's Jeff Goldblum talking to Jeff Goldblum. Yes. And it gets very confusing. Who's the real Goldblum? I don't know. Yes. So doing the impression with the actual person, that is like a treat in a bigger venue with the star. You're on The Tonight Show. You're sitting with Howard Stern. It's crazy.
Can I share with you my first impersonation of a celebrity in front of a celebrity?
Please.
In the last year of his life, I did Jack Benny for Jack Benny.
Wow. How did that go?
I talk about this in my book. At Valley Forge Music Fair, where he'd been playing his violin with a symphony orchestra, it looked ageless. The concert is ending. My sister and I sneak backstage. He walks backstage, looking a little more like an 80-year-old guy. Yeah, I'm in my early 20s. I'd done Jack Benny my entire life as a kid. I'm nervous. And I go up to him and I say, "Well, finally, I get to see the real Jack Benny." I haven't done him in so long. It's hard to do.
Hard to do? That was perfect. Wait, Andy. One second, Andy. That was perfect.
Wow, coming from you.
Oh.
Meanwhile, he didn't respond to me. You know, he was addressing other people. I was a little crushed. And my sister's so overcome with emotion, she starts crying and she kisses his cheek. And he takes a beat and he looks at me. He goes, "Do you want to kiss me too?"
Oh my God, is that great. Andy, I got to ask you this. I know it's your show, but I got to ask you this. I've never met a person who could just do one perfect impression, and that was perfect. Who else do you do?
I used to do a lot of the old veterans. Sinatra, Walter Cronkite, did him earlier. Merv Griffin. I did a time-released impression for Mike Wallace and the whole 60 Minutes gang in 6 minutes. A comedy send-up of 60 Minutes that won a now-defunct Cable Ace Award for Showtime.
Love that.
Mark Harris, my fellow producer. I know Wallace and the rest of them saw it because the show's creator, Don Hewitt, sent me a really nice note.
Give me some Wallace. I got to hear Wallace.
Okay, let me throw in a little tongue-ticking. Few signs in recent memory have garnered less respect than the ones we all come upon at supermarket checkout counters with a familiar phrase, 10 items or less. For over a decade now, this so-called restriction has been more and more loosely enforced and oftentimes entirely ignored. And who's willing to claim responsibility for this legal and moral dilemma? Well, if you think it's the supermarket cashier, think again.
Oh, I love that. I freaking love that. You are amazing, Andy.
Wow. Coming from you, Elon, that is high praise.
No, I stink.
Dr. K, I think I found my new therapist. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us and give us a follow on Twitter at Andy G. Cowan. Well, we want to thank Elon Gold, Dr. Fauci, our supporters at the Benstown McVeigh Media Podcast Network, Mike McVeigh, Chachi, Kevin Horton, Susan Axu, and most importantly, our listeners.
Thanks, Andy. It's my job to listen.
I was thanking the listeners who don't just do it for the money.
Okay.
Come visit Andy Cowan, that's CoWan.net for a way to reach out and get my big book, Banging My Head Against the Wall, A Comedy Writer's Guide to Seeing Stars, forward by Jay Leno, available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Black Rose Writing, and at the National Comedy Center in Lucille Ball's hometown, Jamestown, New York. Itching on the Highway of Life, opening theme by yours truly, instrumental performance by Marty Rifkin, the full tune also available on Amazon, musical stingers by Steve Crum, Lazy Day closing theme by the Bob Mincer Big Band.
For your mental wellness, you can reach me at drscottk@psysolutions.net.
Until next session, I'm Andy Cowan.
And I'm Dr. Scott Kapoyan. For now, I see our time is up.